Welcome back to Nachiyomi. Today we're going to be focusing on Yechezkel, Perek Choftes, the 29th chapter of Yechezkel. This actually serves as the Haftorah for Parshas Va'era as well. And the references are clear because now Yechezkel, in his prophecies to the nations, is turning southwards to Egypt. The next three prakim are going to be focused specifically on Egypt, and this is the first of them. So there's going to be obviously a sort of going backwards and forwards between the Egypt as the great empire at the time when the Jews were slaves there, the Israelites were slaves there, and also the Egypt of the time of the Babylonians, which Israel had an alliance with. So there's going to be movement backwards and forwards in the metaphoric description in this parak, which is why there's a lot to be said about how it is used as the Haftorah. Certain things don't change that much over history. The parak is broken up into a few sections. The first section is running from Pasuk Aleph to Pasuk Zion and describes the punishment of Paro. So in this, we're told that this prophecy takes place in the 10th year, on the 10th of the month, and this is Basiri, Bishnei Masar Lachodesh. I apologize, in the 10th month, on the 12th of the month. So this is over here before the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And we're told that Yechezkel is told to face Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, and to say the following prophecy. This is how the prophecy goes. Hinani olecho paroi melech Mitzrayim, hatanim hagodol harovetz besoich yorov. He turns to Paro, who's this great tanim, hard word to translate, but it sounds some sort of river creature who's crouching in his rivers, Asher Omar Li Ori, who says that the river belongs to me, Va'ani Asisini, and I made it. So what Hashem promises is that he's going to make all the fish get stuck in his scales, and he's going to drown in his own river. He's going to be thrown out onto the desert, and all the fish in the river, which he claims are so powerful, will also be thrown out and will be given as prey to all the beasts of the earth and the birds of the heaven. And everyone will know that I am Hashem. And why? Because Egypt was Mishenes HaKoneh Leveis Israel, was this reed which they leaned upon for Israel. But Tofsom Becho Biknaf Terotz B'okat Olahem Kol Kasef, when they leaned on you and they hurt their shoulder as they leaned on you. So this is the first section. Why? What's going on over here? Why is Paro being singled out from his nation? Shouldn't this be against the nation as a whole? Why is Pharaoh the king being singled out? So the Chidah suggests a very interesting thing. And he points out that it may be that all of Egypt served the Mazal Tle, the star sign of the sheep, which is the Egyptian god, but ultimately it was Pharaoh who served the river. And so if we're going to describe the downfall of Pharaoh in the metaphor of the river as sort of this tanim, and we're going to describe the downfall of Egypt next as a description of we'll call it the human metaphor of death and destruction to attack the two gods of Egypt. What is a tanim? A tanin is, according to most of the classic Mefarshim, some sort of large fish or creature which lives in the river. But the Da'at Mikra points out that it actually could be a crocodile. There certainly are crocodiles in the Nile River. And this is actually is similar, obviously, to the Nachash symbol and sign, which was shown to Pharaoh as Moshe came to his court. But it is clearly one of the particular creatures living in the river, which he obviously claims to act as or is being likened to. So what is this claim that he made the river? Meaning, like, did the crocodile really make the river? Does he really think that? So what the Mitzvah says is that obviously it doesn't mean to say that he thinks he remade it, but what it means to say is that Egypt's ecosystem depended not on rain, but on the Nile as being the canal, the canal central for all the agriculture of Egypt, which means to say they didn't have to spend much time looking upwards to the skies for the dependence. They never had to pray to God. They were completely independent of Hashem, which is why they thought they were self-made. They're being described as this sort of reed of dependence, Mish'enes Hakaneh. What does that mean? So the Radak says that this happened actually twice in history, where Israel relied on Egypt, and in both cases they fell through. First is the times of Sancheriv, where they had an alliance with Egypt against the Assyrians, and when Sancheriv came to attack Israel, Rav Shakeh, who was the general of the Assyrians, says, "Why are you relying on these on this you know?" He called it Mish'enes Kaneh Ratzutzazel Mitzrayim. There's this sort of this empty reed, you know, bends under any pressure. Similarly, again, they had an alliance with Egypt, not learning their lessons when Bavel came. And once again, they did not help. When it came to the siege, they may have attacked the ports, but the Egyptians then backed off, not supporting Israel ultimately. So this did not work out for them. And the last sort of metaphor in this description over here is that when people touch you or kneel on you, their shoulders break. What does that mean? So the Malbim says that if you can imagine a person standing regularly on the ground, their entire weight is distributed over their feet, the balls of their feet and their heels into the ground. But let's say a person's leaning against on a couch or a bed, so their heat is now, their weight is distributed now through their shoulders into the actual bed. Well, what happens if you move the bed? Then they completely collapse. So he says Egypt has been the bed for Israel, and that Israel's been paying large taxes for the alliance to Egypt, for the privileges to rely on Egypt, but ultimately the bed moves. And that means to say all of Israel's weight falls when Egypt ultimately does fall and does not come through in their protection. The next section of the Perek moves from Pasuk Ches to Yud Beis, where it talks about the destruction of Egypt over 40 years. It's interesting, in this section, he talks about, because you said you were self-made, you made the river, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to destroy you and your rivers, and you loy tavod boy regel Adam is going to be so desolate, nobody will ever be able to enter there. Regel behema loy tavod boy, nobody's going to pass through, animals, humans, loy say shave arba im shana, it will be desolate for 40 years. You will have a desolate land. And you will be among the most desolate lands at this time. And your cities will be desolate. What's the 40 years? Where does this come from? So the Radak and Rashi suggests a very interesting thing. They say that if you do the math of mathematics and you go back to Yosef's dreams, it's interesting, in Yosef, in Parshas Miketz, talks about really essentially if you put together all the cows, it was there were 42 years of Ra'avon, which were described because there were three times that it says in Paro's dream, Sheva Paro's to Sheva Shibolim, Ra'oz. And if you do the math, that comes out to essentially for the 42 years which should have been. Of those, only two had leaving a remainder of 40 years, which are sort of stored up for Egypt's negativity for up till this point in time. Very fascinating. Obviously, it's not famine, it's now destruction, but nonetheless, on the same kind of ilk. The Dat Mikra, Pirosh on Tanakh, is a very interesting thing, and that is it could be parallel to the 40 years in the desert. And you'll notice that as opposed to the previous empires, were like, let's say, Moab or Ammon or the Plishtim or Edom, which were described as being totally destroyed, Egypt is not described as being totally destroyed. Rather, they are going to have a period of disenfranchisement, and now they're going to be actually brought back, we're going to see. So it's almost like the Jews in the desert are having a sort of migration period before being corrected. The next section of the Perek runs from Yud Gimel to Tes Zayin. In this section, it's the return after 40 years, but it'll be a lowly nation. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, Miketz Arboim Shana, at the end of 40 years, Akar Beitzitz Mitzrayim Mina Amim Ashinaf Utsushama, they're going to be returned from the nations which they are spread out from. But they're going to be this very lonely nation. Nobody's going to really notice them. They're no longer going to be somebody Ibn Israel relies on, and therefore something they're going to be distracted on to sin. So why will they be returned at the end of the 40 years? Meaning, like, why does this nation get it more than any other nation? So the Dat Mikra points out, as was pointed out beforehand, we see a precedent in the Torah that although it's true that the Ammonites and the Moabites are not allowed to really enter the nation of Israel, into the community, the Egyptians were treated more favorably, Egyptian converts, than the other surrounding nations. That might be because of the actual protection they offered to the children of Israel, whether one knowingly or not knowingly. But the Torah gives them a little extra added afforded benefits, and this might be reflecting that same pattern. What does it mean that there won't be a memory of sin? So obviously Israel will no longer rely on them because they're not going to be a nation worthy of alliance. But it also means, as Rashi points out, that if you look in the Sefer Devarim, you'll notice that there's a mitzvah not to return to Egypt. And there's a debate whether that means to say ever or for trade or for commerce, or like what degree of not entering is allowed. And ultimately over here, that means to say that you won't be a place that or people even be going to do commerce or vacations. There's not going to be the concern about going back to that in that pathway again. Finally, the last section of this perek goes from Pasuk Yud Zayin to Chof Aleph at the very end. And in this section, he describes in more explicit terms that in the 27th year, on the first of the first month, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to tell Egypt that Nebuchadnezzar is coming, and he's going to really destroy or really subjugate Egypt, take a lot of their loot. And at that point in time, Menosati lo yaseretz min Yitzrayim asher asoli mil mashe onakim bayomahu, on that day, atzmiach keren leveis Yisrael. I will make the salvation of Israel will sprout forth once again, and I will give a pischon peh, the opening of mouth in those days, and everybody will know that I'm Hashem. So 27th year of what? Where does 27 come from? We've never seen those numbers in the lifetime of Yechezkel at this point in time. We've only been dealing in sort of the 5th year onwards to the 11th year up till now of the since Yechoniah's exile. So the Barbinah points out this is the 27th year to Nebuchadnezzar's rule. Nebuchadnezzar takes Egypt in the 27th rule. He rules for 45 years. That means there's a remainder of 18 years under his rule that Egypt's under Babylonian control. And his son Evil Moradach will live for 22 years, which means the full 40 years of Egyptian subjugation. What's going to happen at the end? What or how will it be that there will be the upswing for Israel? Because at the end of that time, not the beginning, but at the end of that time, as the Mefarshim points out, the Chida and the Rabbi now points out, that at that point in time will be when Persia rises to power. And Persia rises to power, they have a very different foreign policy than Babel, that will allow the Egyptians and the Jews, the Israelites, and many of the other nations back to their natural heritage. That will be the restitution of Egypt, and ultimately also the restitution of Judea, of the kingdom, the second commonwealth, which will herald in the second Beis HaMikdash. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.